Is it good to have your kid exposed to certain things? I guess this is a meaningful question.
For example,
it's good for a child to get bullied a little bit. It's good for a child to be lonely a little bit. It's good for a child to maybe be exposed to certain misiones. It's good for a child to basically, I guess, let him experience all the different difficulties and let him fail and fall flat on his face and pick it up. Or
that's a great question.
I'm much better at the answer than the question. If someone told me there's a room with the smartest people, I would never think of such a question. That's such a great question. Wow. How do you think of that?
I don't want to take credit for it.
Someone have that question?
Well, someone asked the question about exposing your child to
expanded
pieces in that area.
Oh, such a great question. Let me begin with something. I spent a lot of time thinking about this question. That's why I love the. I thought about the answer. I didn't think about the question. Every single one of us sitting in this room, I know you all, but I don't know you so well that I can speak, know about your childhood, and remember the time that you touched something too hot and you got burned. And you remember, like, wow, I burned myself. But every single one of us, without me knowing, that happened to us. How's that possible? Everyone's silly enough to touch something hot. But we all do it. That's just part of growing up. It happens. Every one of us has been lonely. You know what lonely feels like. Everyone has felt picked on. We know what that feels like. It's a rotten feeling. Or bullied. It's a rotten feeling. I remember being bullied when I was in camp once. Many years ago, I remember what it feels like. It was terrible. And I have still to this day, if I ever see the counselor who helped me, you know, who told those guys that they tried again, they're going to do something to them. To this day, if I would see him, I would stand up for him. I don't know if you know Dr. Bloom. Comes to learn Sunday nights with Mr. Kirschenbaum. So there was a doctor who had an office nearby, and they were vacating. Everyone had to vacate. They were selling the building. And he had no place to run his practice. Dr. Bloom had an office, an extra office. So he told him, you know, use my office until you find a place. Use my office. And this doctor, who was a trillion times more richer than Dr. Bloom, a trillion times, you know, he just gave the yeshiva $50,000 in honor of Dr. Bloom. Set up a scholarship fund in honor of Dr. Bloom, Dr. and Mrs. Bloom, for that tremendous act. We spoke to Dr. Bloom. He said it was no big act. Like, we let him stay in the office. Didn't cost us anything. Stayed there for a little time. But it made such a big roshim. So I want to get back to your question. We don't want our kids to be exposed to being bullied. It's the worst feeling ever. Why would I want my kid to be bullied? A kid to have to be burnt? Burnt? You know how painful that is to be burnt? No, I don't want my kid to be burnt. I no to bullying, no to fire. Being lonely, that's the worst feeling. It's so depressing to be by yourself. But, you know, I enjoy watching my granddaughter cry in the house now, unless her mother picks her up. Like, I'm holding her, and I'm so much more fun than her mother. I'm a barrel of fun. And, you know, I'm doing tricks and flipping her upside down. so much cooler than their mother taking her and holding her, like doing errands. And but she wants to be with her mother, and when she's not with her mother, she's crying and she's lonely. Every child knows what lonely feels, and why do you think they're crying? They don't feel, you know, nurtured. Everybody wants to feel cared for. Everybody knows what it is to feel lonely, you know. So no, we don't want any of those things to happen. But those are musts. They're musts because if you're alive, you know, I'd love for my kid, you know, I don't want my kid to get sick ever. I doubt my kid should never get sick. But Hashem made illness. I remember learning Shaar B'china once. I didn't see this in a while, but the Chavos Olah says that the reason why the Baruch Shalom made children B'davka get more sick more often, more frequently, and more serious. Like adults can go years without going to a doctor. But the reason they do that is so a parent should not feel kochi votzim yadi, like he made the child. So a child gets sick, the parent's nervous, have to run to a doctor and have to daven and to realize that Kodesh Baruch Hu take care. So yeah, we would love to protect our kids from all those things. You want to protect your kid from being exposure to things. So out of respect, you know, there are things in this world that are not appropriate. They're going to walk by, they're going to see a billboard, they're going to see advertisements on buses, and we can't protect our kids. We can't even protect ourselves. We want to protect ourselves. We can't even protect ourselves from some of these things. So no, we don't want them to be exposed. In terms of whoever told you to ask the question, no, I say none of the above. I don't want my kid to be exposed to any of it. But they're going to be exposed to it. Now, do I hold it's good to expose them? No. Why should I expose them? This is not immunization. I had allergies when I was a kid. So how do you take care of allergies? You go every week and they give you a little bit of pollen in the shot, and they give you a little mold. I don't know what your person gets, you know, allergic to. A little bit of ragweed. I think those are the common allergies. And they put them all in, and pollen, you know, pollen, ragweed, mold. That was the fourth thing I was allergic to. And they put them all in this shot, and they give you a shot every week. What do you think they're giving you? It's not medicine against pollen and ragweed. They're giving you the pollen and the ragweed and the mold. There's a fourth thing I'm allergic to also. That's what they're giving you. And why are they giving you that? Because they, you know, if you get a little bit of it when you're younger, you build up the body will build up the antibodies. And now, I don't think I suffer from any allergies. It could be a lot of allergies, but I'm really suffering from it. So I don't think we believe that we treat things like that.
What about helping your kid out of those situations?
Yeah, so I'm saying the way to deal with it is, I don't think like allergies that we give, you know, we don't tell the kid to touch the hot like allergies. We don't tell the kid to get bullied like allergies. We don't take the kid to make him feel lonely like allergies. We don't do that. I don't think we believe in that. But, you know, just to respond to the question, we don't want that. But we have to teach the kid how to deal with it. If he is exposed to it, how to deal with it. So that's very important, you know, to know, you know, what happens. I think that's a good marshal with the allergy. You know, it's not,
it's a bad scene.
You know, it's a very big difference how to treat it, you know. There are so many different,
So if you were able to create an environment where your son wouldn't have to go through, no one ever said a mean comment to him.
Yes.
And then you'd put him you'd grow him up till he's 20 years old, no one ever said a mean comment to him, and then you'd put him on planet Earth.
My son, yes.
Problem with these.
I take my kid. I want to protect him from all loneliness, bullying, burns, illness,
preachers. Isn't Gufa a kid making fun of you, and then the kid who got made fun of crying, and then being comforted and realizing, okay, who cares what that other kid says?
I think Arderek
was never hurt. Then
I think Arderek is. If you haven't, there's no mitzvah inway. You don't have a kid fast. I don't know that, even the three fasts before. I don't know how what the makar is for that. You know, if it says show, so I don't know if it has days. But we don't. You don't have to have chinuch for tzar. They'll figure it out. I would my kid if I have time with him. I would spend a lot of time in mechazek him, and that will be enough of the chizik he'll need that he'll feel so esteemed and respected and strong that when he goes out there and he feels lonely, he'll remember the warmth that he felt when he was a child.
But he won't know to tap into that feeling because he never was exposed to it on a smaller level. So when it comes in a lot, then you'll just be crushed. Unless as a kid you were brought up to stand on your feet and to not care what he says.
Right. I would prepare him that there are mean people out there sometimes. I would tell him that, but I would tell him that he should...
But nothing he can say is comparable to the real thing.
Right, but I would not look to expose him to it just so that he should. I think
the issue with that, like at that point, that like you bring him up like that, that at that point, you should be able to understand that like there are mean people, like you like shield him from it. Then you hope that when that time comes, you know.
Yes, I would tell him that there are mean people. I think this is all a utopian conversation, but we're talking about the hashkafa, the philosophy. I think children don't have to be exposed to bullying. And now it happens to be that when, like the mice that happened in camp, well, for those of you who have been in camp, so any sleepaway camp has this, but in Mung and I, we had a situation, one of my close friends, he took upon himself, he's going to say his Torah in the dining room Friday night. So there were 500 people in the dining room, so the head counselor got up there, and got quiet, and this my friend went up.
And what age, like
Steph Ember. My friend, he was 21 years old. 21 years old. He got up to speak, and he froze. And everyone's always talking during the rhetoric. You can never hear him Friday night. Can't use the microphone, All of a sudden, people sense that. He started off, he said, it says in the parsha, and then he froze. And then people realized that he froze. So everyone was wow, this is really cool, and everyone stopped talking, which is finally the only time the whole summer that people stopped talking during the Dvar Torah. It was pitch silence. You could hear a pin drop, and he was stood up there, and he was stood up there. He did not say a word. He totally forgot everything he was going to say. He'd never written down, but figured he knew it, and he lost it. Didn't remember anything, and after 3 minutes, 3 minutes was eternity. It was my friend. I didn't know what to do for him. I was on the other side of the dining room, and I saw what was happening, and you could see him fidgeting, and he didn't know what to do. He wanted to just shoot himself. So after 3 minutes, he just got off and walked out. Just made a beeline outside the door, and everyone, we all went to tell him it's okay, it happens, and we couldn't find him. And we didn't find him till 1 in the morning. We were worried, and my father-in-law was the head counselor at the time. And we finally found him, and he went at 1 in the morning. My father-in-law went to speak to him. He just found a place to be alone. He didn't want to talk to him. He was so embarrassed. My father-in-law told him that, I don't know why that happened to you. It's very embarrassing for that to happen. I don't know why it happened, but it did happen. And I will guarantee you that one day you're going to find out why it happened. And you're going to be so thankful it happened. So, that's what he told you. He told me that, Rabbi Steinhardt told him that. That's how he got him back to civilization. Okay.
So with these complete shelters, is that they're never a complete shelter. So especially in terms of pritzos, that something will always find its way in there. And then oftentimes,
So you get the pritzos is the real question. Is pritzos? I've avoided that. Can I just finish this one? Just to conclude this. So I my friend's a principal now. Okay, this guy became a principal of a school. And I recently met him, and I said to him, you know, remember that time, I didn't want to bring it up, but remember that time, yeah, said, remember my father told you that it's one day you'll be thankful it happened? I never spoke to him about it. He says, yeah, I remember. He says, so, do you think back that it helped you? Because for sure, very often. He said, I'm so curious, like, how did it help you? He says, I get so nervous before I have to speak in public. And every time I have to go speak, I tell myself that it will never be worse than what happened that night. And you took that, and you're still alive. What are you worried about? It's not going to be worse than that. And that's what gets me through it. Isn't that a great story? So some of the things that we do get exposed to, really, it does help. So therefore, it's very important, you know, when your kid is lonely and when your kid is picked on and when your kid does get burnt, that as much as I don't vote for that, just to get back to what you were saying, you know, even though I don't vote for it, I don't have to vote for it, because it's all in how do you view it when it happens. You know, you have to, when it happens, you capitalize. Wow, this is such a good lesson. Like my father-in-law told that guy, it was the perfect thing. If he would have just gone into, don't worry, no one cared, no one notices, you know, he wouldn't have appreciated that. He knows everyone did notice, and he knows it was never quiet in the dining room ever before in the 50 years that camp existed before, and not in the 20 years since. You know, never. Just that one night was the only night it got quiet. So he told him, yeah, it was very, very, very painful and embarrassing, but one day you'll understand why it happened. Hashem did that to help you. And that's how you have to, if the kid sees that you react, like, and it's a teaching opportunity, then they learn, okay, you know, you have to learn from it. How do you want to deal with it? How do you want to cope with it? So now let's get back to the, you know, that was saying, that's the part, that's really the question.
Before we get
this
to
just,
the...
Yeah, we're just doing the intro, yeah.
Before we get to the real question.
I got a piece of licorice, I think I did it. Yeah.
So if Rebbe's kid is being picked on in school, Rebbe would get involved and make sure, try to end the situation as fast as possible?
I know.
Or let the kid deal with it?
I know Rebbe's brother-in-law did. He told a story in class once that his son was getting picked on, and he taught him how to punch. And he said his wife was very upset at him, but they never had a problem again.
Okay, now, there are two people that I know in this world handle it that way. Rabbi Palberg and Rabbi Winter. Rabbi Luban also?
I mean, he didn't handle it.
Rabbi Winter told me, I said this at a Rebbe meeting, as soon as his kids get into first grade, maybe kindergarten, he said, all right, because let me teach you going to school tomorrow. Let me teach you something. Take out your hands. If anyone ever hits you or bothers you, you walk over to them like this. Until their head is like right in between there, and then you go like this. Twice. I went to tell you this, and none of his kids ever got picked on. Who's that? My Pelberg, he told me he loves that, and he agrees 100%. It's not going to stop a bully from bullying someone else. But not my kid. Me, I didn't do that.
Why?
Because I wouldn't do that myself. I couldn't ask him to do something I wouldn't do.
Why? Well, Rebbe wouldn't do it because Rebbe's parent never told him to walk over to me like that.
It works, by the way.
Like a zombie. It's convenient. What are you doing?
You know, there are... Manal and Musa, you want to have kids to stop using smartphones and cell phones? When you see the cell phone, you take it and you get this fish tank and you put it in the fish tank.
Doesn't work.
That's the end. And I can't do that. If someone would tell me that that's the way you have to be Mahat, I would have to leave kind of and go to a different job. I just can't do it.
It doesn't work. Never mind, can't do it. It simply does not work.
Why?
because it only, it creates an us against them environment, and this is us, and this is what we're doing. If you take this away from me, I'm going to make it my mission to go around you and to get you back and to do it anyway. And then,
have a huge, bright future in Hina.
For the record, I think the fish tank is for any phones.
Huh?
I think the fish tank is for all phones. I don't know if you see this. The fish tank.
No,
it's
not
phones.
Okay,
I believe it's cool.
No, so is there a downside to having your kid learn that if someone fights with him, then you make sure the kid's not interested in fighting with you again?
I think there's a good thing. Is there a downside in that? Depends on the kid. A lot of kids, if there's not the personality to do that, you're making more stress for him because now he has to also fight. Might get beat up more. Yeah, winter kids, I think, are pretty tough without by winter. It depends on the personality. If the kid was so angry, so it's okay, send him back. Yeah, that type of personality kid. I want to, you know, some of my kids, if I would have told them that, they would have created more stress. So I think that's an area where a parent has to advocate, be open with the school administration, make sure you keep in a school that they protect kids and they don't sweep it under the carpet and they're not too busy to take care of it and it's important to them. And if it's not that type of school, then make it that type of school or find a different school.
Well, there's no idea to let your kid figure it out and let him do it. If your kid is bored when he comes home from school every day, let him figure it out. Let him come up
your grandfather, I think it was his chaver, Rabbi Goldstein from Diaspora. So one of his friends, Aaron Goldstein, his nickname when he was in Yeshiva was Habibi. Israeli, you know, the Hartzion Goldstein, learned was Talmud of the Rashiva, I'm pretty sure. And he told me that his father, each one of the kids when they reached the age of 14, 15, he gives them a one-way ticket to Europe, from Eretz Yisrael, London, gives them a ticket and $100 and tells them that they have 3 weeks. 3 weeks or 30 days to get home.
Who does this?
Rabbi Goldstein.
Rabbi Goldstein does this.
Yeah. He gives him 30 days to get home. I think it was 30 days to get home.
He's 2 for 4.
And they get home. So what do you do? Because I know you have to find the Jewish community, find out, you know, I get a job, and snore a little bit, get a job a little bit, you know, you gotta buy a ticket, gotta find out where to look up to get a ticket. You gotta buy a ticket and get home. That's the goal.
How old? 15?
14 or 15 years old.
14, 15.
That's what he did. Now, I wouldn't do that, okay. But is there anything...
From Israel to London, and goodness, to get picked back from.
So is that something that I send my kid to do? You know, if they learn how to cope? Yeah, some parents feel teach them how to cope, you know? A lot of parents give their kid an allowance, and that's the only money they get, you know? And figure out how to spend on the things that you need. You know, yeah, we take care of, obviously, you know, we're taking care of you, but anything other than what we give you, you're on your own. No, take it from your allowance. Okay?
There's no sense setting up and once you're in that situation, figuring it out after. If the kid gets into that situation, do you just make sure, just talk to the kid that's bullying? Do you train your kid to learn how to deal with it? Do you let the kid do it himself? Maybe you don't want the situation to happen, but now it's probably going to happen. So just the world we're in. So how do you deal with that?
I think if you get the child to be open, he should, you know, give him, depends how young he is, or if he's a, you know, second grader, third grader. He's a little kid, you know, that may be a bit, but he's a little older than that. You want to get the kid to speak to the teacher, the coach, or the principal.
So you're saying let the kid be alone
first? first? Did you speak to them? No, yes, did you speak to them first? Yeah, you know, because no, I didn't speak to them. So, no, do you feel comfortable speaking to them? Yeah. So go speak to them. You follow up with the kid. Okay, tell me tomorrow what happened when you spoke to them. So I want to hear, and then let me know if it's helping. Do you want me to speak to them? No, I don't want you to speak to them. And you're sure? Yeah. Sometimes we have to speak anyway. You know, a lot of parents go. The rule, the worst thing you do as a mechanic is you tell the kid that, oh, I just spoke to your parents today. What? About what? Why? And you realize that you thought that the kid knew, and you say, oh, I think I met them in public. So we're checking out the bags of tomatoes. You never, ever, ever tell a kid you spoke to your parents. Never, ever, 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 ever. Ever.
Maybe once got burnt?
No, I never got burnt because I never did it. But parents don't talk and kids don't talk to you because of all the other people that mess up. I have to be very good at that, but people don't, you have to be very confidential, you have to be very discreet. You don't know who's talking to who. So parents say, please don't tell my kid that I'm calling you. So I that's so redundant, that's so obvious, but I guess not so obvious. But yeah, so I would try and coach my kid, these people that help you, these people that speak to you, but they're very busy people. Tell them very busy people, but you could call the parent, listen, my son's going to come over to you. You know, you call, you make it easier for him. You know, I told my son to come over to you. Please don't tell him I'm calling you, but I think you should know he's very upset about this. And that's good parenting, because then you teach your kid how to deal with it. And really, they probably would deal with it, but then a kid comes over and he'll knock on your door, and then after 2 seconds leaves, and then you answer the door, and there's no one there. And he said, oh, I tried going there, but there was no one there. You know, so kids don't capo some of those things. So yeah, that's how you teach him how achra meister to deal with it. But he needs a little help. But you don't tell him you're helping him. You help him without him knowing. That's the way to do it. Now let's get to the ikar. Are we ready?
Yeah.
That's the ikar. Let's go check the AC.
Yeah, he's in there. No, it shuts off. So let's talk about the issue of exposure to communities. Now,
so what communities?
You know, different communities have more different exposures, different schools, friends. What kind of exposure do you want the kid to have? We believe that there is a certain, in terms of, you know, Habatzas Torah, there's a certain, you know, Haftacha from the Chazal, people who are going to go out to be Marbetz Torah. Rishim spoke about this all the time, and this is, you know, Yadua wrote down the special protection for the people who are, you know, carrying out the Ratzon to spread Hashem's Torah, especially protected, and the kids are protected. I remember being in the Rosh Yeshiva's Blatshir, and the guys were saying that, Rebbe, it's not true. Look around. We have kids in our own system where the kids are having problems. Rosh Yeshiva said, really? Who? in Blatshir, who? And it was closed door. Like, well, it's no one here. It's just us. You know, only us 50 guys. 60 guys this year. I remember that, like, he had his jacket off. You know, his sleeves rolled up. You know, who? Anyway, it went through every single name. It was a, you know, a relatively small yeshiva. We knew all the Makanachim was the yeshiva's kids. There weren't that many branches. So we knew which kids were out of town. So they went through, I know it sounds weird, but they went through every yeshiva, you know, out in the system, every Rebbe that was out of the yeshiva that we knew, and they went through the kids. No, this kid has this problem. You know, they went through everything. There's not one kid. Not one kid was a problem, and he defended it, and you know.
And the fact is that they won't be bad, or they won't be any worse than they would be if they're in town.
Yeah, no, that fact is that Hashem's going to protect. It's not going to be affected by.
They could be worse than bad if they're in town.
Yeah, so there, no, this is certain.
Some people kind of worse if they're in town.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Of course. It's true because
you need to have tough to bring him up in town.
It's a bigger. Yeah, it's true because when they're in town, they don't feel like they are the You know, their leadership, feeling that you're a leader is what Gufa gives them, that Hargasha. They can feel like they also have responsibility. They're representing their Ratzon Hashem. They have to see their father's doing it, and they have a certain obligation to live up to that. So that makes a very big roshim on them. They feel like they're part of the, you know, the pe'er, the royalty. They feel part of the royalty. So that's very crucial. Rashiva quoted Sephorno Chukas. He always spoke about that Sephorno Chukas, Akaraduma, and by the way, Marmakomas are plenty. That's not debated. But nevertheless, we don't believe in just saying, okay, I have a protection, like I'm Superman, so shoot me. You know, and watch the bullets fly off. No, that's not what it is. You still need a lot of protection. And you know, like the Rashiva, I remember telling me, I was when he was in camp. So I was, he had the Rashiva in camp. He wasn't protected by all the usuals. So like I tried to like think of questions to ask him. So I was already in Miami. So I went over to him and I said, Rebbe, Torah Semes Kamenetz is requiring, at the time, sixth grade and up to wear white shirts only. I think they eventually changed it to only seventh grade and up, but at the time I heard it was sixth grade and up, white shirts only.
Nowadays it's like that?
Pretty sure. Seventh grade and up, for sure.
Which?
Torah Semes Kamenetz.
They have to wear white shirts?
Only.
Because in the high school they don't.
High school? Kamenetz?
Oh, Kamenetz.
Torah Semes Kamenetz.
Oh, I think like Torah Semes here.
No.
Okay.
So Torah Semes Kamenetz. So I said, Rebbe, said we, you know, we didn't require the guys to wear white shirts in Miami. I said, if in a couple of years we're mamash going to be viewed, I thought, I was wrong, but I thought if you like the shkatsim. So maybe we should have at least the high school, maybe just the 11th and 12th grades, base medish, we should have them wear white shirts. I was trying to get the Rashiva going. That was the question. I was like, oh my gosh, I hit like a raw nerve. So like a minute later, they started Baruch Hu in the camp minion, in the base medish minion. And after Myra, okay, if I follow, I'll try a different time. Then after Myra, I know I was out on the campus, walking around near the playhouse. And Rabbi Yishal came over to me. You know Rabbi Yishal. He said, Rashiva was looking for you. Where are you? I said, I'm over here. He goes, Rashiva was looking for you. I said, Rashiva was walking down the hill. He says, well, what's wrong? Rashiva was so angry at my question. He was looking for me. He was just like going straight into the answer. He didn't like say, you know, no, like no esteem on the question. Says, how could you do that? There'll be no Milwaukee. There would have been no Milwaukee. I don't know what he was talking about. There would be no Milwaukee. Then Rabbi Yishal explained, and we continued the conversation, that when there was a community in Milwaukee, and they wanted a yeshiva gedola. They wanted to have a high school. And there was none in Milwaukee. There was just a day school. Community day school, and they want to have a Torah institution, a yeshiva gedola, and they called Lakewood, and they wanted a yeshiva to come to Milwaukee from Lakewood, and Lakewood tried getting guys to go. They couldn't get anyone to go because the younger light from Lakewood, I heard this from the yeshiva, not firsthand, the yeshiva said, the younger light from Lakewood said they didn't want to go because there's no cheder. And they're not going to send their kids to a community school. So only go if there's a cheder. So the Rashiva said, so I got called. I had no manpower. I had no one ready to go. So I called up the younger light from Lakewood. I called them up. They said, you have people who are ready to go. So who? So they gave me some names. So I called them up. I said, so go, you'll start a cheder. But they weren't ready. It'll take a couple of years till they start a cheder. Where their kids going to go until then? So they wouldn't go. So that's why Rashiva pushed, and he got, you know, Rabbi Moshe Harris and Rabbi Waxman and eventually Rabbi Chaplitz to go to Milwaukee. And the Rashiva says this is that if You see that? So the Yidden are going to go, why? Because the white shirts. Said Rashi said, because of cheder. Says, that's what cheder, that's what white shirts is. White shirts means cheder. I learned white shirts only. So if everyone wear white shirts, then no one's going to go leave Marvitz Tar anymore because there's no cheder. Right, I told the story to Lubin. He said it's true. Rashiva said that, that wasn't the main reason why Rashiva was against white shirts, but it was a secondary reason, which that night he decided
so you're
to
saying,
come.
You're saying they shouldn't have it in town because then when those people grow up, they won't want to go out of town?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why he was against white shirts, but in terms of the Chitzonius, also the, you know, seems to be a very, like almost a need that if they're all yeshiva kids, then they're more protected, which is true. If you have more B'nai Torah, and we know how it is, you know, you have more B'nai Torah, they act more Torahic, it's true. And there, I think there has to be a little bit of, like I know many people who sent their kids, they asked Reuven Becker in Tucson, you know, most of those Beckers end up going to public school, not to the day school. Because the day school, a lot of the times, I don't know which kids and which Kufus, but Shimi told me that it was very, very diverse and different people running it, and there was a bit ashpa for their kids, and they took them out and put them in public school.
That's this Rabbi Becker?
Yeah, his siblings. He should give a session. He'd be a great person to give a session to the Bay Spanish guys, yeah. like a vod on what it was like growing up in Tucson, Arizona. And so a lot of the Becker kids who are in Mechanicum now went to public school, because when you're in public school, you know that's not for you. And they father, you know, hired a Rebbe after in the afternoons to learn with them. So they knew. I don't know how things are in LA. It's considered a developed city, but Tucson, Arizona isn't, you know. And so exposure, yeah, we realize that there's exposure, but you know, when you have, Rashiva used to speak about the insulation that comes from the home. The main hashpah for a child is the ruach, the avira in a home. To create an avira in a home, and that almost can protect the kid from anything.
Can we segue off that? So
what is
it? 1240.
Yeah.
There's
1140? Is it 1240 or 1140?
1140. There has to be a proper environment, a home and all that. But an issue with these proper environments is that, especially in terms of priests, it's really never a full and complete shelter. And there will always be something somehow, whether for some people it's a magazine on the street or for other people it's a smartphone. And there will always be, or a computer, there will always be some way for this stuff to trickle in. And often in these types, especially in a real in-town place, this stuff is 100% shunned. And it seeps in there, and it could cause the child to feel that there's something wrong with him and he doesn't fit with this. And it could wreak damage beyond the scope of what the actual priestess does.
Yeah, the reaction to the priestess, I mean.
And how he feels about now that he is someone with a status of someone who knows or does something like this.
Well, you're correct. That's why it's very important to have the interaction by parents who are level-headed and could be madrichim to understand that, you know, there's a lot of things in the world, there's a lot of priests in the world. Kids who are growing up who don't have televisions, they put televisions in prisons because that's considered like as important as food.
Is it a proper way to be madra?
Well, I don't think we have enough time to go through every single device, what's okay, what's not okay, but I think it is important that if a kid doesn't have a TV, he needs to know why he doesn't have a TV. You know, you don't just tell it. You know, kids should know that we are very proud of it. It's not a restriction. We're very, very, very proud of that fact.
How do you set it up so that he doesn't want a TV? that he doesn't want an iPhone, he doesn't want a laptop, he doesn't want any of those. He doesn't want secular music.
I heard a good word from Ray Jacobson, with Rashid in Brooklyn, first trail. Tell me a good word once, when I was engaged. He told me that every collar, or every Rebbetzin, I said every Rebbetzin, the most chashuv Rebbetzin, said the Stipler's Rebbetzin, if there would be a bas kol would come from Shemayim that would say that we do not have to wear shetels, you'd see them throwing, the Rebbetzins throwing the shetlach from the rooftops. What he said. And he was trying to tell me, because I must have sounded cavalier, that, you know, at the time my kala was like making a big deal that she had to wear a shetel, you know, at the chasana. It's like, so where's your chasana? You know, stop catching so much. You know, like, basically, why I was wearing a shetel. But he was trying to sensitize me that it's a very serious thing. It's very hard for them. And the most special Rebbetzin. So, I'm getting back. I'm not ignoring your question. I just take roundabout routes sometimes. I don't think the goal is that a kid, you know, would love to have, you know, a TV or, you know, but so geschmack to have an iPhone. Yeah, the goal is that they don't want it. They shouldn't want it. I think the hadracha that we're talking about is more that they should be proud of what they do have, what they do stand for. So, like, I'm very proud. Like, the reason why I don't have a television, there's going to be great stuff on stuff, but you could speak about how the world is so depraved, they have such terrible schmutz. We're very fortunate that we don't have to watch it in our house, watch it 24/7. You have to, you know, speak about things like that, make them feel proud. Oh, we're very fortunate enough to have it. But also, not to say it over as chaz a treif. Like, yeah, they'll go to their grandparents' house and whatever, they're going to see a television or whatever, their friend's house, see a television, like, they shouldn't think it's chaz or treif, like, oh, I'm not allowed to look at it. You know, maybe there are certain like, kanoim kids who, like, wow, they're, you know, I wouldn't think that's the norm. The best thing, they should be very proud of what they represent, what they have, what they don't have. And if you can make them feel pride on the things that they do have, you know, that's, like, amazing. And not then have them feel deprived. So give them a lot of other things that they can have. Like, I remember, you know, I told my wife this. She thought I was crazy at the time, but I think my son was. We started ordering every newspaper. You know, Yatet, Amadia, Mishpacha, like, it was a little expensive, all these things. But the reason I did is because, like, what does a kid do when he gets to the house? Like, the house can't be a boring house. Oh, my friend's house, they have, you know, unlimited internet and, you know, game, you know, TVs and, you know, movies, whole selection, movies, and a whole big theater. You know, they have to feel like they have things also. So I was into finding different things. We got a fancy basket. I remember that was part of my, you know, thought that.
On the slanted court?
Yeah. But, you know, I put a basket out there and we got a pool table. And she was throwing out that pool table. Can you imagine? It's such a beautiful pool table. And we got a ping pong table and, you know, like, you have to, like, plan. You have to plan. Some of the kids, you know, little kids are fine, but once the kid gets older, you know, 11, 12, years old, like, they're looking for things to do. They need stimulation, you know. Like, what are we doing? Like, what's happening? So, yeah, you have to do things, you know, take up, you know, rollerblading and jogging or swimming or, you know, go biking. You have to, like, do things. You have to. I don't do any of those things, by the way. I wish I did. But, you know, But you have to, every family is different. You have to find things that will interest them, and then they're proud of it. Wow, we have such a good time together. Do you realize that? You tell them, you know, do you realize that many families, that when they have a chance to do things together, they don't do anything. They just sit and they just watch a movie. Oh, we're so fortunate that we don't have to do that. We have things to do. You say a few things like that, just to point out, not to be negative on other people, but that was an inside joke. But to, you know, just to build them up, to feel like they should be very proud of what they have.
And that'll combat a taiva in Sahara?
No, listen, taiva was given to the world. There was it wasn't excluded. Bnei Torah were not excluded from taiva. Okay, I don't think taiva was given only to the non-Bnei Torah. Bnei Torah have taiva also. So dealing with taiva is a totally separate issue. Exposing yourself to it to make the nisoyon harder is the only reason why we don't expose ourselves to it, because you have enough problems without the exposure.
No, exposing to a smartphone, that it's not a foreign concept, but the first time you see it, it's just overwhelming. And
I mean, unless this kid's growing up in some kind of
what?
The kid doesn't need a smartphone to know that there's such a thing as taiva. He knows there's taiva out there in the world.
No, not that he knows that there's taiva.
I would say straight up.
You can grow.
I was blown away. I'm not interrupting you, so hold your point. Okay, I want you to finish the thing, but I do got to tell you this. I remember my first years when Lubin came here. It was 2000 or 2001. I couldn't believe some of the things that he said. I wasn't Rashi, I was principal of high school. I couldn't believe some of the things he said at question and answer session to the high school boys. I remember Nachmi Lubin was there as a 10th grader, and Avram Lubin. He used to say that the reason why I don't have internet in my house is not because of my kids. I'm worried about my kids. I'm worried about myself. And he would say that, and I stood there in awe. How could he say that? His son is sitting right there. So that's a beautiful message, because a child sees that, yeah, I think you would be very happy, based on your comment before, you'd be very happy with this approach. Because they're not, you have such a flowery way, a beautiful way of saying it, shunning. What was he saying? He had a great speech before. He's not shunning the scope of the device. I don't know, some fancy way of saying it. He's not shunning the fact that there's taiva in the world, and then he thinks there's something. No, there is taiva in the world. He'll do it for himself. He doesn't want to expose himself. He doesn't want to make taiva for himself. I love telling over this story I heard from my good friend, Rabbi Shimon Max, Rosh Yeshiva in Cherry Hill. So I love the story. He told me he was driving with Shmuel Kamenetsky back from Mechasana in New York. He's going back to Philadelphia. Cherry Hill is like right next door to Philadelphia. So he's driving back, and they were stopping on, I think, the New Jersey Turnpike, and at some rest stop. And they pulled over, and there were, you know, a bunch of immodestly dressed women who were standing there. And Shmuel Kamenetsky said to him, "Hey, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from me?" That's what he said. And Max called me up, I think that night or the next day. He said, "Mordechai, you got to hear this story. You got to hear this story." He told me the story. He was like blown away. He was so blown away. But that's so helpful when you hear a story like that from Shmuel Kamenetsky. You know, tell a story. Yeah, or Lubin say, like, you know, he didn't do it for himself. So, like, you get to hear, like, you know, taiva is something that the Ribbono Shel Olam had in the world, that we all have the nisayon to try and do our best to combat it, and it's real. It's a real thing. And you have to be wise about it. Now, can we always protect ourselves from it? No, we can't. Rav Shmuel Kenzie wasn't able to protect himself from it. He drove it to New Jersey Turnpike, and he went to the rest stop. You know, and that was what was, you know, there in front of him. And he said, like, "Oh, I, you know, what the Ribbono Shel Olam want from me?" That's such a great message. You tell it over to your kids. and they see that it's real and it's okay to talk about it and realize that that's, you know, a normal nisayon, and you know, it's not gonna be pretty, not gonna be perfect every time. You have to try though.
Is there svara that you purposely want to expose them to these sort of things in a kosher way, just so that they won't be like curious? Like for example, like showing them a movie, like a kosher movie, just so they don't have.
Rabbi Trapper, Zichron Levracha, I asked him once about My Fair Lady. It's like a classic, you know, family movie, you know, but there's like a romance scene in there. I don't think I saw My Fair Lady, like the movie's too long and I fell asleep. But there's probably a romance scene in there where there's the, you know, the boy, I don't know, anyone see My Fair Lady recently? So is there one romance scene in there probably where they hug and whatever, and you know. And Rabbi Trapper told me that he thinks that, I'm pretty sure the Rebbetzin once told me this also, like that romance is good.
Why?
the kids should know there's such a thing as romance. Otherwise, they think everything is just, you know, just pure preetzus. Like romance is like is the allure, is the
that is
the
preetzus.
Fact. No, no.
Because
no,
there is such a
no.
Watching the way your father and mother interact with each other.
The idea of
but that's a crucial one. Your husband and wife, that's in their hands.
It's
all, this is on a movie.
No, and someone sees the girl, and then that's not.
You know, you don't see romance. You don't see romance. What you see is you see preetzus. You don't see romance. You know, when you see like you know when you see a you know the goyim in the street. You know, hugging each other in the street—that's not romance. You know, romance is like a very like flowery. Like, oh wow, it's like one of these. They're so in love with each other. That like that type of, you know, swept off her feet. And so he said like that gives to the imagination.
You shouldn't
enough.
Skip those parts.
No, he told me not to skip. Don't skip that.
It would be better not to show the whole movie. To show part of it.
Now, I wouldn't show it, Yeshiva. I'm not showing
it,
Yeshiva, for that reason.
Is
it
wrong?
Can we
come
here to watch it?
Yeah.
Like, there's a preacher scene in the movie.
Yes, but if
you come here, if you're here, Chalmoyd Ben Azman, you're going
to
want My Fair Lady. Yes, you can watch My Fair Lady.
It doesn't have a place in our society. That's a nice understanding, right? That's a good message.
That's right, Chalmoyd. You watch My Fair Lady.
You get fixed ulcer.
I don't know
what
he called it.
Not that necessarily a boy marrying a girl.
He felt like that's like they should think that that's Chazer Treif.
Is there a problem that will create your room?
He feels.
Unless we're talking about a 15-year-old kid.
Right, but immediately.
I don't remember the scene. If it's overly graphic, then not.
He is,
you know,
outside of the box of the yeshiva life. And he will feel that. If it's done right, if it's done right,
you know,
if
you're showing it in the yeshiva, some kind of documentary, whatever, yeshiva has standards, you can't. I'm not saying that's that, but
in this yeshiva society, because of these types of emotions.
I said was that
My Fair Lady?
No, so generally,
as you watch a movie, right?
And
more
says, okay,
more
skip this part, right?
Tight.
So generally, what the kids can imagine in there is worse than what was actually in there.
I don't think that's such a good approach to say, let's skip this part.
Also, he said shows that, like, I can watch it, I'm fine, but you can't.
For the simple fact that he gave into an assignment.
I remember when.
And it creates such a downward spiral.
The yeshiva used. Oh, we have to finish soon. This time goes so fast that I remember when the yeshiva. The guys were bringing in the Miami Herald. You see how like times change, and like, who reads the Miami Herald? What's that? It's the Miami newspaper. And the guys used to bring the Herald with them, and the Herald they in the sports pages, they had all these you know inappropriate advertisements in there. So we came up with this idea, the Hanala, that we're going to edit it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to edit it. So we're going to cut that out. So the yeshiva bought, had to get a subscription, and they got a subscription and waited it out. And Rabbi Grumblatt used to cut out the things for the newspaper. And that's what we did. Because that was more like, you know, it's like it was hanging around the, you know, outsiders would come in. I remember, this is funny. The Rashid and Rebbetzin used to have a lot of guys stay in their house, you know, in the basement on Gordon Street, in the old building. And the guy, I guess we have to end, but one time a Chashev Rashiva came, and he had to use the restroom. And one of the Rashiva's nephews was a big sports fan, so he left, he had the New York Post for the New Yorkers in the room. He had New York Post, he left it in the bathroom. So the Rashiva's bathroom. And so the next day in Yeshiva, the Rashiva schmooze, he was speaking about how terrible the newspaper is. And that was a little bit embarrassing. You know, like, you know, you walk into the Rashiva, you know, the Rashiva, and you see the New York Post in the bathroom. The Rashiva didn't bring in the New York Post. As Rav Luben said today, like, the Rashiva used to read the New York Times every day. I bought it for them. And I bought it, and then he read it in 4 minutes. But Rav Luben said, when I tell that story, I should just say that the Rebbetzin used to edit it first for him. So, but I don't think he, you know, he literally read it in 4 minutes. He just felt he had an obligation to know what was going on in the world, and he read the New York Times. So anyway, so it's Chazarovah tonight. So it's for the recording. We went through the union of exposure to lots of different things, and I don't think we look for the exposure. But you know, since you know it's going to happen, you have to plan for it. And you the home, I think that's a very important yisod to, you know, the avira, the ultimate insulation comes from the home. And you need lasiat d'shmaya and davening. You know, the stipler said, when they asked him, you know, I'm sure the stipler's home was pretty chashva home. He said, you know, when do you have to stop worrying about, you know, chinuch habanim? Now, Reb Chaim Kanievsky was already writing Svarim, and the stipler says, stop? I still daven for my chayimu. The stipler, he's still daven for his chayimu. Chaim Kanievsky had already written Shana Halachos. He's written Svarim. He's probably already making a siyum on Kol HaTar Kula. And he's still davening for his chaimu, for the chinuch, habanim. He should stay on the right derech. So just because we do things right doesn't mean it's going to turn out right. There's have to daven, you have to, you know, you have to do everything you can. Okay.